another episode of Escaping Addictions, the podcast where we talk about addictions and how to overcome these destructive lifestyles and behavior. I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. The podcast is starting to gain some traction. And tomorrow we're going to have on David Saffel, who is a life coach and also has written two books, including the book Recovering Reality. So stay tuned, and right after this break, we'll get into the addiction, my addiction. Thank you for staying tuned. So today on this episode, I'm going to talk about my addiction, my past experience with addiction, and how I got into it and how I was able to escape from the addiction that had me a prisoner, and my life was destroyed, and my mind was destroyed, my spirit was destroyed, my emotions was destroyed, my family, everything. It's a very dark and lonely place to be. So, there could be a lot of theories about what causes a person to become an addict or an alcoholic, and why some people are able to take a couple of drinks and then put them down and go on with life, and why some people, once they start drinking or doing drugs or whatever, or doing stuff that other people might be able to do recreationally, once an addict or an alcoholic starts, develops this process called a craving, where the person just craves the substance and no longer has control over the usage and over a lot of decisions they make. So when thinking about what plays into that, it could be genetics. It could be some people are just born with a genetic gene that they have an allergy to alcohol, that alcohol affects them differently than normal people, that once they take that, their body doesn't process alcohol in the same way. And so when a normal drinker, when they take a drink, a beer or two, they already have this feeling that, this is enough for me. Whereas an alcoholic takes a couple of drinks and they're just getting started. So then there could be issues that the person is dealing with or haven't dealt with. And these issues are so painful: childhood abuse, sexual abuse, relationships with the parents that are just that was very negative and hurtful. Just so many different things that a person can be dealing with inside of them emotionally, and they use alcohol or drugs to numb the way they feel. And they just keep doing this over and over again until one day they wake up and they are an alcoholic. And once they realize that this is starting to negatively affect their lives, they might be to the point where they no longer are just able to put it down. So with me, I did have a very negative relationship with my dad growing up. And basically on my 18th birthday, we fell out, and I was in Atlanta working with him, and there was a scene, and it was already strained as far as I was concerned. By this time, my mom and dad had been divorced for a long time, and, I had maybe hopes that one day they might get back together or whatever. That never happened, and he got remarried, and so I was down in Atlanta working with them, you know, trying to once again see, hey, maybe me and my dad can find a way to get along or whatever. And it didn't work. As a matter of fact, the worst outcome came about and we just fell apart. And I decided to go back to New Orleans and I was done trying to work things out with my dad as far as I was concerned. So this could have played real heavily into the way that I drank and used drugs, because even though I told myself that it really didn't matter, it did. And it was, even though I, you know, nobody, especially a man, doesn't like to say, well, something hurt him or something like that, but it did. So, and I just buried those feelings and I went back to New Orleans, and I had already been working at this video store, and I went back to the owner and he rehired me. And so basically this became my family. The people that was involved in this business, they became my family. And you know, my mom and my two sisters, we all lived down in New Orleans at the time. So where the addiction came into play, on my 21st birthday, I went out with the guys at work. You know, we were, like I said, we were family. I mean, even though they were Italian, most of them were Italian, friends of the family, we were family. We were all family. And everything they did, I did. You know, everything they went, if they had a wedding, I was there. If it was a holiday, I was with them. So naturally, my 21st birthday was coming up, some of the guys took me out, you know, for my 21st rite of passage event, where I was supposed to do the 21 shots and, you know, get drunk and all of that kind of stuff. So I did. We went out, and that is how I came to find alcohol and love it. When I got drunk at this event, I thought I found what I've been looking for, this thing that made me feel normal or made me feel like I didn't really care what people thought and things like that. I didn't care about anything. I just felt the alcohol made me feel supercharged and on top of the world and unstoppable and stuff like that. So I started drinking. I started hanging out more and more with people that were drinking, going to parties and stuff like that. And eventually the drink, you know, eventually because of my relationship with my dad, that was non-existent, basically, I looked for a substitute, and I found a friend that I really found that kind of relation with, that, you know, we went fishing together and stuff and all kind of things. So that kind of became a substitute for the relationship that was gone with my father, with my dad. And so one day it was this guy that offered me some weed, and I was shocked to learn that he smoked weed, but I said, wow, if he does it, I mean, it can't be that. I thought that weed was something that, you know, only whatever, you know, that I had a stigma about what a weed, a person who smoked weed would look like or sound like and act like and all that kind of stuff. And so I tried the weed, and it was a negative experience at first. I was paranoid. I prayed to God for it to stop. And eventually it did stop. But after it stopped, after the paranoia and all of that stopped, and I eventually left this guy's house and was going back home, I started playing some music that I had played 100 times before. And when I played it this time, it just sounded so different. It sounded like I could really understand what was being said in the song. And so I got home, and I used to make my own rap tapes back in the days. And I started listening to my tapes, and they sounded way different, and I liked them more. And I thought I could, I'd found the answer to being able to understand life or whatever. And so I started smoking weed, I started doing weed more than I did alcohol. And so the weed I guess everybody was wondering what was going on with me, because I didn't do anything before that except, you know, drink when I turned 21. This was maybe a couple of years later, maybe, or something like that. And now everybody's looking at, you know, like, what happened to Wiley? You know, he's turned into this drug addict. And eventually I stopped working at the video store, and I started working at this record store in the mall. And the manager there, he smoked weed, so we started hanging out. Then eventually he went off to Beaumont, and then I went out there later, and it just started this process of me going place to place whenever things would fall apart, because my main focus was just smoking weed. And so eventually I wound up in Griffin, Georgia, where things were about to just fall all the way apart. And I went down there once again, because everything was pretty much over for everywhere else. So I went back to my dad and started working there. But they were all out in a trailer park. My dad was living in his car at the time, and I still don't know why to this day. I mean, to think he was doing drugs or whatever, I never saw him do drugs. So, you know, I heard rumors or whatever, but anyway, so everybody out here at this trailer park was doing crack. And eventually I started hanging out with this guy, and that's what he was doing. And I'm like, what is this guy doing? And eventually, you know, he offered it to me. And at first I was really reluctant, but he was like, well, what's one time if you don't like it, you know? And so I tried it, and boom, there it was. I thought, now I really have found the thing, this wonder drug. I mean, it was insane how the high, which doesn't last long, but it's insane. It was insane how, but it felt just way out remarkable or whatever. And so, but instantly, almost, you know, it was like no time, I was basically in the streets, in jail. And when I got to jail, eventually my mom bailed me out, and I went back to Jackson. I was going to stop everything. I said, I got to stop this stuff. This stuff is destroying my life. But of course, there was this continual cycle of I would start back. And I wound up going to treatment. I left. The first time I went to treatment, I left within a couple of weeks. It was like a 30-day program. I left like halfway through because they wanted me to do what I'm doing right now is tell my life story. And I was like, but I agreed to do it. And so they said, well, it's Wednesday today and you have to, you know, you got to Sunday to prepare. And you know, you ain't got to say what you don't want to say. You just tell what you want. I said, okay. So just so happened, the person that was sitting in the circle next to me left. So they came back that same day and said, well, now you got to tell it today. And I said, well, no, I'm not telling it today. And they said, well, you have to. I said, well, no, I don't. And I'm not. And so they said, well, you're going to have to tell it or you're going to have to leave. So I left. So I left treatment. I went back to church. Everybody was asking me what happened. I was at church every Sunday, and I guess they had me on a prayer list, and I got pretty much, I got offended because I was like, I said, why they put my business? They didn't really put my business. I felt how I felt at the time, like they put my business out there for everybody to start asking questions, or like, I felt like they must have already known, and people are coming up asking me, well, what's wrong? What's going on? And I'm not about to tell them I'm doing drugs. I wasn't nearby at that time going to tell them something like that, even though someone might have already known. But so just so happened, I ran across some Mormons and they came by the house and they did these lessons at the house. And I joined the Mormon church. That was a way to escape. But I really did think, because of the way the Mormons was explaining the gospel and faith and baptism, and the only thing I really didn't believe at the time was, you know, Joseph Smith and him being a prophet and the Book of Mormon. But I thought, okay, well, maybe I will see the truth, believe that one day, which I never really did. And I don't go to the Mormon church anymore. But so I went to the Mormon church. I went to school. I went to treatment countless times. I went to a Pentecostal church. I moved here to there. I was back and forth to Atlanta, back to Jackson. It was just a downward spiral. Every time I would, you move two steps forward, it was 10 steps back. And it all kind of ended in Jackson, whereas I was living somewhere and a bunch of stuff happened. And basically, it was time for me to leave. So I came back. I had been to Nashville once before that. So I came to Nashville through the homeless shelter. And that's when I met my church, the church I attend. They were coming out to the missions doing the Bible study. And we clicked together and, you know, everything. We just clicked. And so I started going out to church again, and I was working, and eventually it all happened again. It fell apart. So I eventually left, went out to Alabama to another mission. And I was doing okay there, and they were about to put me on staff. And what happens? It all falls apart. I mess it up. I go start back getting high again or whatever. So I go out and come back to Clarksville, I knew a friend that I was in the program with at the mission, and he had a house, and I went to stay with him, and one cold, snowy night, he threw me out. So I went to the people next door, called the police, and they came and took me to the Salvation Army. I went to school out at Austin Peay for a while, and what happened? Of course, I was doing okay. I was there for about 2 years, and then what happens? Boom, it all blows up. I blow it all up. So I'm in Clarksville, and I'm right out of options. I was staying with a friend after I lost the apartment I had. After I left the apartment at the school, then I had got me another apartment. That, you know, I lost that one. Then I went to stay with a friend, and then he was moving back out west where he was from. So now I was pretty much, what am I going to do? So people were saying, well, why don't you go to Nashville? I'm like, I've been to Nashville. I've been everywhere. I've been, you know, and when I was in Clarksville in this apartment, this is when I was just tortured by the addiction. I was paranoid. I was barricading my doors. I was just afraid all the time. It was just miserable, and I couldn't stop. I still couldn't stop. And so eventually I went out. I came back to Nashville. And when I got to Nashville, I had a van. The Salvation Army, so the people at the Salvation Army gave me a van. So I drove the van to Nashville. I came back to Nashville. And so I had, at the time, I had like some food stamps. So I was going and buying cold cuts and stuff out of Walmart. I was sleeping in Walmart's parking lot in the van. And I was starting to really feel embarrassed and, you know, ashamed, because I would go be sleeping and I hear people walking by talking, and I look out the window and somebody might be getting into the car next to the van, and I'm like, oh my God, these people saw me, probably might have seen me in this van sleeping out here. What am I doing? This is insane. And I started asking God for help, because all of this time I was trying to figure it out and do it myself. And I was just at the end of my rope. I was just at the end. There was nothing else for me to do. So like I said, I had these food stamps, but eventually I wanted something kind of, you know, I wanted some food, some warm food. So I said, well, let me go to the mission and I just go there and eat. So I went to the mission, and one of the guys at the mission told me that, hey man, they it was Sunday. He said they serve a plate lunch over here at this church at 3 o'clock. And I said, okay, you know, so somebody said rang with me. So I waited till 3, and I went over there, and that's when I met this lady that told me about this place, that it was a place called The Cookery. It was a place that's here in Nashville. It was a place where they take in homeless people and teach them culinary skills and give them a place to live and stuff like that until they graduate the program and, you know, and go back and to society and be productive. So I really didn't want to go, because I was like, I've been to so many programs, I can't even remember how many I've been to. And I said, what is another program? I know what, you know, I know everything about a program. So, but I, I said I would try it. So I started calling the owner, and I never could get in touch with him. Then I just texted him one morning, and I said, hey, man, I need some help. So then he texted me right back and said, well, call me. And I called him, so he told me to meet him at the church on Wednesday. That's where they had a place where the guys would come sleep. So I went over there, and his wife was there, and she said that he was at the cookery. So I was trying to find the cookery. They told me where it was, and I kind of knew some of the streets, but I was looking for it and looking, and finally I stopped at this gas station. It says right over here next door almost. So I looked over there. I saw it. I went. And I kid you not, when I got out of the van and I went and walked through the door of the cookery, I felt God take away the addiction. Just like that. I felt it. I felt different. I felt that I didn't have that nagging voice in the back of my head that was constantly saying, let's go get something. You need something, or you need something to feel better, or whatever. So I got into the program. That was in 2013, July the 11th. And I never had another drug since then. Now, I did have another drink, which I wound up, after I left the cookery, I wound up renting an apartment in somebody's house. And they lived out in this neighborhood, and it was Halloween, and the people out, you know, everybody out there, they knew him. He'd been there forever. So they started knowing me, and they invited us over. They invited him, but, you know, they invited him. So then, but, you know, they said I can come too. So I went over to this Halloween party at their house, and I was over there, and somebody said, you know, they were drinking, and everybody was drinking. They said, you want a beer? So I was thinking that, I said, well, I'm not really an alcoholic. I'm, you know, so I could probably, you know, have a beer. And so I did. And I had a couple of beers, and then that feeling came back where they call it the mind altering, the substance alters your mind. And once you, and so when that happened, I was like, oh man, that, you know. So I started buying a six pack, and it turned into wine, and then it turned into hard liquor. Then one night I was coming home from downtown Nashville, and I did a stupid move and went through a gas station parking lot because somebody made me miss the red light and pull around and did this, and next thing I know, there's the blue lights. So so after that, it was probably almost a year later, and I was still drinking. And so it was Halloween in 2018, and I was back in that miserable mind state. The alcohol was worse than the drugs as far as the mind. I felt like I was hallucinating. It was miserable. I had stopped going to work. I was thinking, here we go again, man. I'm about to lose everything, be back on the streets, and this and this. And I'm sitting there, and I don't know what to do. I'm just lost. And on comes this commercial saying, you know, asking if you have you had, do you have an, is alcohol a problem? You know, is it affecting your family, your life, your work? And I said, so at the time I'm thinking, hell yeah, it is. I'm like, this is, and that commercial just rang so true for me at the time that I called the number. And so I was supposed to be going out to Florida, but I wound up going to another treatment center here in Nashville. It was a very nice one. And when I got there, I heard the message. I heard people were coming out to talk. People were coming out to the treatment center to talk. And this had happened all the time, but I didn't hear them before. I never, you know, like the Bible say, you have ears to hear, but you don't hear. This time I heard them. You know, I heard people telling their story, and it sounded like mine. And they said that the answer they found was a 12-step program. And so they said, get a sponsor, pray, read, go to meetings, work with another alcoholic, thank God for keeping you sober at night, and do that every day, and you probably won't have a drink. So I got me a sponsor. I went to meetings. And every day is a day that I can deal with life without a drink. And my life is, I went to treatment on November the 2nd of 2018. And today I have more than I would have ever thought that I would have had in this period of time. So day by day, every day, I just try to do the right thing, the next right thing every moment. I wake up in the morning and pray to God for help and to keep me sober. I read me some literature, if it's only the text messages that some of my friends send out every morning on the phone in a group text message. I try to go to a meeting I don't go every day now, but I try to go to a meeting every chance I get. I talk to another alcoholic, and I thank God for keeping me sober. And day after day, life has gotten a lot better than I ever thought it would. So at one of these AA meetings, I met this guy, like I told you, the guy that's coming on the next episode, David Saffel, that he's written a book, and he used to be an addict. He's 30 years sober. He'll tell you all about it. And I met him at a meeting, and we started talking, and we started doing a podcast. And then I started doing my own. So I started doing my own through the Anchor app. And so that's why I do it. Because somebody told me what they did to escape the addiction and to stay sober. And the only way that I can keep it is to give it away. And a lot of this stuff that I'm telling, I really don't want to tell it. I really don't want to put it out there like that. A lot of stuff, you know. But it's, to me, it's, you know, God saved my life. And to him, to God, is all the glory. And I do this to glorify God. Because without God, I tell you right now, I wouldn't be here today. It'd be no way that I'd be here today. So that's my addiction story, the most of it. The general, I mean, there's a lot that happened in there over a period of time, but that's the general story. And you know, if I thank you for listening. And we'll see what happens next on the next episode of Escaping Addictions and Other Things. Goodbye. This has been another episode of Escaping Addictions and Other Things with your host, Wiley Walker. Thank you again for joining the podcast. Hope you enjoyed it and hope you will return. God bless. Have a good day.